What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that wasn't postponed due to international call-ups. Coming up, Bruce is back, but why? There's a final transfer chat of 2024, previews, scouting reports, and more. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And welcome back to our weekly chat on all things Football League. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, and I am joined by Adrian Clark. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, I had my little EFL trophy fix last night and ready to go. Ready to rock and roll. Let's do it.
We're going to hear plenty more about what's been going down at St Andrews as the show goes on, which is where Adrian was on Tuesday. Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good. Yeah, enjoying a little bit of downtime after the relentless nature of the first few weeks of the season and off to the Valley on Saturday, which we're going to discuss in detail a little bit later.
I'm there too. Unbelievable.
Right, I will do my best to ignore you.
I'll try and dress better this time.
Yeah, no shorts in September.
It will be a happy valley for those two, but maybe not across the dugouts. More of that later. Let me ask you first, though, for a favour, please. Would you subscribe to this podcast if you listen regularly? Even better, leave us a nice review, 5 stars, all that good stuff. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, helps us grow the show, and we do appreciate it. Before we roll into our news, let me also remind you that we have partnered up with Quinbet for another season, and to celebrate that, they have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. I'll put that link in the show notes too. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support, and they run the National Gambling Helpline. Okay, news comes first. Well, you can't keep a good man down. Steve Bruce is back in football. He's replaced Neil Critchley as Blackpool boss. Here he is talking to the club's in-house media.
Well, I've been delighted to get the opportunity, I have to say, and I'm delighted to be back in football. It's been a long time. It's nearly a couple of years, which is forced upon by myself. It's particularly, I thought, time to take a break. Itching to go, and let's see what we can do. After speaking to them and sharing their ambition of what they want to do and the project they put towards me, then that challenge was too good to turn down. I've missed football. Quite simply, I've been in it all my life. I've enjoyed it immensely and missed it over the last, 12 months in particular.
Sam, you were asking the question on the group chat as to why he's back. He's missed football, he said. He's an addict. How's this going to go? Because I've got kind of Mick McCarthy vibes about this. 14 matches he lasted last year, won two of them. Am I being too negative?
Possibly. Yeah, I think it's easy to steam in, isn't it? But when you think of the club that he's going into and what he's achieved and what have you, you have to probably take a little bit of a step back and just see how it goes. But yeah, I'm astonished, really. But I hadn't seen those comments. But if I was to predict what he was going to say, I probably would have gone along those lines. They're just addicted to it, aren't they? You know, like, he doesn't need it, does he? I'm sure he has a nice life and he's probably enjoying a lot of downtime with the family and such like. But yeah, to think that he's going to be back in it on the touchline in some less than glamorous away spots on Tuesday nights is just incredible. But I mean, they can't stop scoring goals, can they, Blackpool? I mean, they're getting bang for their buck at the moment, the supporters.
Oh, we'll put a stop to that, Sam.
Quite possibly. But he inherits a decent squad, doesn't he? Yeah, I mean, as Clarkey alludes to there, he'll probably get the structure of the team and defensively probably get them sound. We'll see how it goes.
He's got Steve Agnew as his assistant head coach, Richard Keogh and Stephen Dobby on the staff. Keogh was there before. I think it's interesting, Clarkey, and again, this speaks to the addiction angle of it, doesn't it? We didn't hear it in the clip there, but he said he first started talking to the club a week ago. You'd think he'd want some kind of input over any last-minute transfer deals or, you know, get an assessment of the squad. You come in after the window's closed and, I don't know, maybe it'll be a convenient excuse for him, but we spoke last week, didn't we, about them losing the likes of Grimshaw and Dembele not being there on loan this season. So he's got to work with what he's got, and that's going to be an interesting challenge for him.
Yeah, he's going to have to back himself. He'll have to lean on the guys that are there, because I thought he'd retired. And I think maybe he felt in his own head that he'd retired. You know, it's a couple of years out of work. You know, how closely has he followed? League One in particular. That's what I would ask. That's what I would be asking him if I was, you know, looking to employ Steve Bruce. So I think he is going to have to rely on the sort of current knowledge of guys like Keogh and Stephen Dobby. I know that the person who employed him, the sporting director David Downs, is someone he knew from Aston Villa. So that's the link. That's where it's come from. But yeah, how hands on is he in terms of knowledge of the current squad and the teams that he's going to come up against? Yeah, so yeah, I found it really interesting actually that the club, when they announced it, they had a number of quotes. They also said Steve's ability to grow and develop not only our players, but also our coaching talent was important to us. So basically, he's there to mentor Richard Keogh and Stephen Dobby potentially for them to maybe one day take over. It's an interesting take.
If we're being harsh, because this is something he's been accused of in the past, is this basically a job where he can come in and watch training for a bit and then come in at 2:45 on a Saturday and say, go out and try your best, lads?
Yeah, he's going to make the decisions, isn't he? He's going to make the decisions over the team, but he's not going to do a lot of coaching. I don't know what Sam thinks. I think he's more of a figurehead manager, someone that brings calm and in-game knowledge and experience to the table. But I suspect that Agnew, Keogh and Dobby will do the legwork here.
Yeah, he's always had Stephen Clements with him, hasn't he, who's... Yeah. Not going to be a million miles away, but got his own number one gig at the moment at Barrow. So he's like to have someone slightly younger on the staff to probably, as you say, Clarky, take the majority of the training sessions out on the pitches. So he'll have that with obviously the two aforementioned guys who all had, you know, really good careers. And, you know, like I said, the entertainment value has certainly upped in the last few games. And I think Richard Keogh, and I said that probably on one of the previous podcasts, in terms of his skill set as a player and the experience he's got, I'm sure he's got something to add to the coaching game, as is Stephen Dobby, who was a terrific player.
All right, we'll see how he gets on. His first game is not until Saturday of next week at home to Exeter. Kudos to me. I managed to get through that whole section without doing a Steve Bruce impression. Paul Simpson, meanwhile, has left Carlisle after they were beaten by Tranmere last weekend. Carlisle, born, he finished his playing career with them, returned for a second spell as manager in 2022, took them up to League One via the playoffs, but they came straight back down again. His son Jake was head of performance. He's gone too. Chairman Tom Piatak has confirmed the club are in the process of recruiting a new sporting director as part of a total restructure. He said, we're actually going to look at restructuring where we're taking this club, where we want to take this club. It's necessary. We can work on both of them simultaneously, but we'll be selecting the sporting director first and then we'll be selecting a head coach. So the academy coaches, Mark Birch, Stephen Rudd and Jamie Devitt, are in caretaker charge. They oversaw defeat in the Bristol Street Motors Trophy by two-time European champions Nottingham Forest Academy side on Tuesday night. They go to Bradford on Saturday. I actually quite like this, Clarky, in that they're saying they'll put the sporting director in place first, because that, to me, says that the chairman is not meddling too much. He wants to put somebody in that position to then choose who the coach is, which seems quite joined-up thinking.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, look, the sporting director and the manager have to be aligned. They have to have the same sort of ideas and have to get on, don't they, first and foremost? They have to work really closely together on identifying what's working, what's not working, what they need. Yeah, that's a really important dynamic. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense. I think that most managers would have gone far earlier than Paul Simpson did. It's really, you know, that desire, that want for him it to turn around, because I think he's got them promoted 3 or 4 times before, you know, so they want to give him every chance, and it just wasn't happening, was it? You know, they would consider themselves, Carlisle, one of the favourites to get promoted, and it's been a really indifferent start to the season. That said, the two of the last three games that he had weren't that bad. They beat Barrow in the Cumbrian Derby. Yeah, then they went to MK Dons and capitulated a little bit, but I think other teams will do that. And then the last game against Tranmere won 2-1. They only had 4 shots. So it wasn't a car crash performance. They just got picked off on the rare occasions that they were opened up. So he's maybe a little bit unlucky on that sense. But when you look at 8 wins since the start of 2023-24 season, it's just not enough, is it? So yeah, I get it. I just feel sorry for the 12 new signings that have come in, 3 of which came in this week. So, you know, you just come in. I mean, that happened to me at Carlisle. I went on loan there, and after one game, the manager stepped aside and let the the number two take the job. So yeah, it just can be quite irritating if you're a new signing, but just got to get on with it.
Are they feeling, Sam, that they can not write off this season, but believe they've got enough not to get dragged into any kind of relegation scrap, whilst maybe being realistic in that they're already, what, 7 points off the top of the table? So thinking, well, we can let this run with the caretakers for a couple of games, make sure we get somebody in who's correct rather than making a rushed appointment just to get you through the short term.
I think they have greater hopes and expectation for this season. Let's remember they had a bit of a go last January. Maybe not enough to give them that fighting chance of staying in the division, but they've been recruiting some eye-catching signings, I think, over the course of the last few windows. And again, this summer, obviously with the new ownership, you know, Ethan Robson, Charlie White, Terrell Thomas, Aaron Hayden, to name just a few, were all playing in higher divisions, or certainly at clubs with bigger aspirations last season. So I think, yeah, hand in hand with the new kind of model that you just described, I think this is a club that could be having a go this year. We'll wait and see who the new manager is going to be. But yeah, I think for Paul Simpson, he's obviously had incredible success there over his periods in charge. But I think there was a little bit of criticism last season, quite a lot of criticism last year, the way that they struggled to adapt to the higher division. So no surprise, having lost three of their first four, that this has happened. But I think the ownership and the supporters will be optimistic they can climb the table and fast.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that to see if that's what happens. Just before we move on, we ought to say it's been a few days now, but just to add our thoughts to the family of Sol Bamba, who passed away last weekend at the age of just 39, Cardiff, where he played 118 times, said he was a hero, described his impact at the club as immeasurable, and Leeds, where he was between 2015 and 2016, said he was one of the nicest people in football, and that seems to be the consensus. So he will be a big miss to football, not just in England, but around the world. Okay, we are doing transfer chat soon. Before that, though, it's our Player of the Week, Team of the Week, Goal of the Week feature. Who did you go for Team of the Week, Adrian?
I've gone for Barnsley. I think that was a cracking win down at Crawley. Crawley are not an easy team to play against. You know, you're not going to have much of the ball when you come up against them. So you've got to get your off-the-ball work spot on. And that's what Barnsley did in this game. It was a press fest, and they came good with it. You know, two of the goals came from turning the ball over in really good areas of the pitch. It was a first half where they just tore into them. You know, they're trying to play out from the back. Barnsley are on them. Great energy. 3-0 up at the break, and then they sort of coast to victory. They only had 31% of possession, but the shot count was really telling. 8 shots on target to Crawley's 1. 15 overall to Crawley 6. So it's, you know, it was a fantastic win. They've won at Lincoln. They've now won at Crawley. Just got to sort out their home form, Barnsley. But if they get that right, they can certainly be knocking on the door for a promotion. I think Adam Phillips was probably the star man for Barnsley. But they're my team of the week.
All right. Yeah, they seem to have gotten over that opening night defeat against Mansfield, which you bore witness to, I seem to recall. I got goal of the week this week. Let's hear it, shall we, rather than me talking about it.
Hit. Magnificently! A quite astonishing goal from Andy Vyman out of nowhere.
Love that. Starts agriculturally. Big boot upfield, flick on, and then Vyman, first time like a golf shot style volley beyond the despairing dive of the keeper. Probably just me, but I assumed Andy Vyman had played for Burnley at some point, but apparently not. Maybe I was getting confused with his days at Aston Villa, but well done to the veteran who was the scorer of the goal of the week. Sam, for player of the week, you've gone for a right brain box.
Yeah, Duncan Watmore. That was his fourth goal of the season in the victory over Sheffield Wednesday. And I think that's the first time he's been on the victorious side. So long time coming for him and for Millwall. I think probably one of the most annoyingly inconsistent players out there, because I think on his day, he is just relentless and can win games single-handedly, but it probably just doesn't happen enough. But I think because of his endeavour, his work rate, the fans everywhere he's been have really liked him. And he is talismanic for Millwall at the moment. Put one on a plate for Josh Coburn on his debut and scored another goal himself. And yeah, it was a resounding win for Millwall, much needed. Tanganga very good at the opposite end as well. I think we felt that he was going to improve them when he was back from his suspension. But yeah, Watmore at the moment. Any wavering doubts about, you know, Millwall's ability to create and take chances? He is carrying that mantle at the moment. And with, you know, Coburn coming in and Ivanovic as well, although I think he's going to be injured initially for a couple of months, which isn't ideal. But things looking up for Millwall and Watmore, no question, one of the best attackers in the division at the moment.
I'm absolutely devastated to learn that he's 30 years old. I remember covering him in PL2, what seems like a couple of weeks ago. Good grief. I said he was a brain box. He's got a degree in economics and business management, which makes him cleverer than me. Speaking of economics, next today, in a desperate bid to appeal to a younger audience, we'll tell you who won the transfer window. So we're going to have a look at a few teams from each division that the chaps have picked out as having done particularly well. Sam, in the Championship, and maybe somewhat controversially, you are championing the business of West Bromwich Albion. What is it particularly that you like about the Baggies' business?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm probably putting into context of the start to the season that they're having, that resounding win over Swansea. I think Hegum, who has come in defensively for them in the early weeks of the season, has done really well. And then I think Mikey Johnson, one of the standout players in the Championship last season, to get him back to bolster all the departments that needed improving, I think they've gone and done that. I say that the one little concern I've got is that Daryl Dike's still out. Josh Madger's obviously started brilliantly. Not really seeing Devante Cole as of yet. And I thought, you know, given his return at Barnsley the last couple of seasons, that was a good bit of business on a free transfer. So just waiting to see what the script is there, whether he's just getting up to speed, up to the tactics of Carlos Corbran. A few unknowns that have come in as well. Diakite, Holgate's not had a great few years. Rakic, defensive midfield player. Dobbin's another player I like, who can play an array of positions across the front line. So I just think, combined with the start to the season they've had and now that additional depth that Carlos Corbran hasn't been able to call upon in the last year because he's been managing with one arm tied behind his back to a degree because of the off-field issues at the Hawthorns, I think now with a strong squad, with players for different positions and with his tactical nous and his quality as a manager, they got a great chance.
Yeah, they certainly started really well. We're going to go from another winner into a loser, but we're sticking for both in the Steel City. Adrian, we've spoken about Sheffield United. You put them in your winners category. I'm totally with you here, but talk me through your rationale, please.
Well, this is just a superb clutch of players that they've brought to Bramall Lane. You know, a top keeper in Michael Cooper from Plymouth. I like him. A lot of their business was done early as well, which I think is smart on Chris Wilder's part. You know, Jamie Shackleton, Callum O'Hare. I think he, you know, he's nailed on to shine. I think he's already got off to a bit of a flyer. Kiefer Moore hasn't got going yet, but we know what he's about at the top end of the pitch. Harrison Burrows, sensational last year for Peterborough. Harry Suter, highly rated player a couple of years ago before losing his way. Alfie Gilchrist, featured for Chelsea quite a bit last season. He's there. Tyrese Campbell's there. Jesserin Rakzaki, you know, I remember talking about him a couple of years ago.
Everybody goes mad about him, don't they? He's been sick for ages.
Yeah, he's a really exciting young player. You know, there's a little bit of Bukayo Saka about him. You know, he's an excellent right winger. So, yeah, I really like the new look Sheffield United. So, yeah, I think they're going to get top three. It's just, can they get top two? Just a quick word on the late business done by Hull City. I wasn't really impressed by their window up until near the end. They ended up getting Charlie Hughes from Wigan, who's a player I really like, centre half. They got Carl Rushworth, who was superb in goal for Swansea last year. Casey Palmer, we know how good he is. And Abu Kamara, who was magnificent for Pompey during the second half of last season. I think Hull closed the window spectacularly well.
All right. Well, they're a Yorkshire club too, so that is going to allow me to link it into Sheffield Wednesday fairly seamlessly. Sam, you have concerns. They got Ike Ugbo, which was the one that they wanted. But what about elsewhere? Have they lost key players? Have they not strengthened in the right areas? Why have you marked them down so harshly as losers?
Losers.
Yeah, the biggest contradiction in terms since I started this podcast, because this is probably the first time I've been negative about Danny Rowe and Sheffield Wednesday in what seems like an eternity. I think just the lack of depth in the squad, the lack of quality signings, basically putting enormous pressure on Danny Rowe to continue to impress and make up that difference that he's having to do when you look in comparison to the teams that they're going to be jostling with. And the last few weeks have been desperate. I mean, they haven't created anything of note. And I'm sick and tired about talking about Sheffield Wednesday midfield, but the way that Leeds bypassed it, and the way they capitulated at Millwall is a huge concern. And you look at, I mean, Olef Kabaki is a bit of an unknown quantity. Ingleson played that beautiful pass in the opening day victory against Argyle, but we've not seen loads from him. Ugbo is a terrific goal scorer, I think, potentially. But the rest of the business, Jamal Lowe, I think, has been a bit part player, hasn't he? Probably in the Championship the last few seasons. Chalobah the same. So I just think there's probably not enough. You know, is probably the reason that I'm being a little bit critical. And I'm looking at that side now in the aftermath of three desperate performances, really, and just thinking that it could be an almighty struggle. Had they gone and got, you know, a player in each department, maybe with the pitch to help Danny Rowe, my sentiment could be different this morning. But all of a sudden, yeah, the last three results combined with a lack of real star quality coming in, I think that top half shout from me would be looking a little bit silly.
Adrian, you've picked Coventry City for your losers. They've not been decimated, that's maybe too strong, but they really have lost key players, haven't they? And you feel a bit for Mark Robbins because there's not much more that he can do there other than get promoted, but they seem to lose a big player every year and not really replace them with people of the same calibre.
Yeah, look, O'Hare and Palmer going, you know, the two number 10s is a real blow. They were sort of jostling for that position this time last year or throughout the campaign, really. Yeah, I'm just looking at it, feeling a bit underwhelmed, really. You know, Jack Redoni from Huddersfield, he's got potential. Brandon Thomas Asante, another one, but neither made a tremendous impact yet. You know, it was a quiet window for Coventry City. It wasn't the kind of window that showed that they're willing to flex their muscles and really have a tilt at promotion this season. And I think that the squad is pretty strong, and just with a few more quality additions, certainly players to replace O'Hare and Palmer, they can get into the playoffs. But yeah, I think their business has been a little bit weak. I will also throw Luton into that mix. You know, a club with money to come down from the Premier League. You look what Sheffield, just described what Sheffield United have been doing. Well, Luton's was modest business. You know, no one really, I don't think, of top Premier League quality has come in. You know, they're players that wouldn't have got near the team last year, in my opinion, maybe with the exception of Mark McGuinness. But yeah, I'm a bit underwhelmed by Luton's business as well, because they must have, you know, a fair few quid sat in the bank, but they're trusting, maybe a little bit like Danny Rowe at Sheffield Wednesday, they're trusting their head coach to coach their team, you know, to success this season rather than giving them, you know, maybe the players they needed.
If we go into League One then, we're going to put Birmingham in the winners category, certainly in the spenders category. Sam, you're a resident striker. What did you make of more than £10 million on a Chelsea-esque seven-year contract for Jay Stansfield?
Yeah, that did raise a few eyebrows. My eyebrows.
You got two of them. That's a few. It's fine.
Yeah. I was surprised when I had that filter through. Obviously, there was speculation about the vast sums of money that were going to be parted with from Birmingham for Stansfield. So that didn't overly surprise me, albeit it's League One and I'm still coming to terms with these crazy numbers that are just all of a sudden gone wild. I mean, for the player, I think, you know, he could quite easily go and play in a top Championship side right now, challenging for promotion. You could argue he could get minutes in the Premier League, but unlikely that Fulham were going to allow that to happen, considering he's on the periphery of their side and getting some minutes. Scored against Birmingham in the Cup, didn't he, the other day? So every time he's had an opportunity for Fulham, it feels like he's stepped up and contributed. So I am surprised that he's gone down to League One. The counter to that is that, look what Paul Mullin did. For an example, when there was a project somewhere clearly that had the aspirations and the financial backing to go through the divisions, he's been there. They love him. You know, you have to put all that into the equation, and there's an opportunity probably for him in the next 2 or 3 years to get into the Premier League with Birmingham City, where he will be an absolute hero. And he's going to have a fine pay packet as well to go along with it, I would suggest. So I get it all. It's just probably a little bit of a... still a gamble, given that he's probably nearly ready to be contributing in the Premier League. He seems to have real good attitude as well. He's tough. He's resilient. So he'll be able to mix it at that level, and I'm sure he'll get a bundle of goals to complement what Alfie May and good old Lyndon Dykes are going to do already.
Yeah, Adrian, you saw them on Tuesday night. So we'll talk more about how some of the new signings are settling later. But what Sam's just touched on there was interesting to me, because they play a sort of 4-2-3-1, don't they? And how are you going to fit May, Stansfield and Dykes into that? 3-1 doesn't go.
No, you're going to have to accommodate them in different areas. And that's what I really picked up on in the game last night, because Alfie May and Jay Stansfield played against Walsall in the Bristol Street Motors game. And it was Jay Stansfield up front and Alfie May as the number 10. And then and when they made changes, when Jukovic come on, because Lyndon Dykes is away with Scotland, Alfie May didn't go up front. He went to the right wing. That's not really where, he's a guy that needs to be in the box scoring goals. He's a very willing player, Alfie May. He'll do anything for the team. He wants to create as well as score goals. But yeah, it's going to be tricky. Dykes is going to be the target man option, isn't he? Jay Stansfield is a really tigerish front man. He'll drop into midfield, win the ball back, and then surge at opponents. But equally, he'll also run off the shoulder of the last man. So, yeah, I mean, you spend that kind of money on Stansfield, surely he's going to be your principal centre forward. But it could be that he operates as a 10 sometimes behind May or Dykes, depending on the sort of, the opposition. So, yeah, watch this space. It's a lot of new signings. That's my only query. But, they're all clearly hungry to be there, want to be part of the project, and they're players that Chris Davis has recommended, I'm guessing. So yeah, I think there'll be a slow burner. At the moment, they're scraping results. I think the longer they play together, they'll start to cut loose a little bit.
Yeah, certainly that's the intention. I guess that they have spent an awful lot of money. Obviously, they would probably say in their defence they did get, according to Transfermarkt, €5 million for Jordan James. They have offset it to some extent. In terms of a League One loser, Clarkey, you've picked Peterborough United. Obviously, they've made pretty big money in getting rid of Harrison Burrows and Ronnie Edwards. What, over £6 million for those two. Are you putting them in the losers because they haven't replace them adequately? They've kind of done what is quite Peterborough business, isn't it, in taking somebody from non-league and saying we're going to back this guy. I guess that works sometimes, but maybe not every time.
Well, Peterborough normally win the window, don't they? Or they're always up there. They're very shrewd in the market. And, Darren McCanty, I've got a lot of respect for the work that he's done at the club. But I think it's been a bad summer. I really do for Peterborough. They've lost Ronnie Edwards, Harrison Burrows, Johnson Clark-Harris, Ephraim Mason-Clark, and Josh Knight. And these were their star players. And I look at the guys that have come in, and they're all gambles, aren't they? They're players that have played primarily at a lower level that are looking to make an impact, and they may come good. This may make me look really silly in a few months' time, but from the get-go this season, Peterborough haven't really got going. I've seen them in the flesh. Abraham Odo looked okay in the game I saw. Con Clark is one they've got high hopes for, but he hasn't really caught fire yet. Kean Hayes, he's sharp, but can he make a consistent impact? Jack Sparks had a dodgy start at left back. I just think they're markedly weaker than they were last season, and that's unusual for Peterborough. So I think they've taken a little bit of a backward step.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I was quite interested to see Peterborough get Yonvium from Colchester late in the day. centre forward, one of a couple that Colchester have got in their ranks, Tavide, another young centre forward. And I've liked both of them. They're handful, strong, good technique as well, Iombian in particular. Yeah. So that's a good pickup. And one you could imagine not necessarily hitting the ground running, but being someone that they could sell for a considerable amount in a few years. So him and Tavide, I think at Colchester, one to keep an eye on. I think it would be amiss of us not to say that Crawley are probably certainly the team that have been impacted the most by outgoings this summer. And listen, they were really impressive in that game against Brighton last week, even in defeat, heavy defeat as it was. So there's some really good players that have come in, like Hepburn, Murphy, like Flint, the centre-half, I said on last week's podcast, and Will Swan. I mean, that was a sign-in late in the day. So that will go some way to appease the support. But to lose nine of your starters is just unprecedented from the playoff final. You're talking about the goalkeeper, one of the best in the division. Maguire, who was superb, I think, on loan. Kelly, to MK Dons, your best player and maybe the best finisher in the division last season in Orsi. So that is just unbelievable. I mean, you're still scratching your head as to how or why that's been allowed to happen. But Scott Lindsay started the season well. He's going to be up against it. But I'm intrigued to see if he can keep them in the division with a new group of players from, you know, all over. There's a bit more experience maybe than what they had last season. But you still have to say they've had the most turmoil, probably not brought in, you know, the names of the ilk of the majority of the teams in the division when they're doing business to reshape the squads.
Yeah, and one of the chief causes of said turmoil were MK Dons, who are the winners from our League Two section. Adrian, they did not take losing in the playoffs well, did they? It's a huge revamp under new ownership as well, of course. You like what they've done there?
Oh, yeah, great. Very good players across the board. The performances haven't been amazing so far. I think they'll be quite disappointed, actually, with their points return. But I do think they'll come good. You know, there's some really good names that we've talked about a lot over the recent years. You know, Lemon A. Evans from Stockport is a good player. Offord was a good player for Crewe. Lawrence Maguire, aforementioned. Tommy Lee from Accrington, Joe Pritchard from Accrington. Yeah, good players. Callum Hendry, former sort of scouting report star. You know, there are loads of others as well. Aaron Nemain from Notts County. So, yeah, I think they've made some quality additions, MK Dons, and I'll be surprised if they aren't in the top three actually come the end of the season, because I think the manager's good and I think they had plenty of decent players already, but they've been well supplemented, I think, this summer. But they've got off to a slightly slow start.
I wonder if Max Dean had in his mind that he'd be going from Leeds to MK Dons to Ghent in his career. I would suspect he probably did not.
Has he been sent off yet? Because Max Dean is his middle name might as well be Red Card Sam. Yeah.
In terms of our losers from League Two, that honour has been bestowed upon Harrogate Town. Adrian, this was your pick, so I'll let you go first on this one too. Is this a... I mean, I'm just looking at it. They haven't spent any money, essentially. Is that the issue here?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they did okay last season, didn't they? Very much mid-table. They flirted with relegation a little bit. But yeah, it just feels a little bit uninspiring. Just four new faces have come in. Two new wing-backs in Zico Asare from Maidenhead and Ellis Taylor from Sunderland. And I think that they've done okay so far. We haven't really seen Jasper Moon and Duke McKenna's on the bench.
What it a just name feels... that is, Jasper Moon.
I know. It is good, isn't it? Yeah, they just needs... Yeah. Just needs a hyphen, really. Button Moon would be perfect, wouldn't it? The hyphenated one, but yeah. yeah, just they're the least active team in the window. And yeah, I would have expected them off the back of a season where it didn't really click for them to maybe be a touch more ambitious. So, but let's watch this space.
Yeah, just looking, you know, through the list this morning, I think, you know, Fleetwood team maybe to highlight in terms of some big players that they've lost. Domicheri going to Bristol Rovers, I think, has got good potential. Liked him when I've seen him. Hayes as well, I think, Clark, you mentioned, going to Posh. Also Stockley, I know maybe it's not been the most fruitful time of his career, but I think, you know, he's an asset, isn't he? I think certainly. So intrigued to see how they go. You're talking about free transfers and loans that they've brought in. So, yeah, I think Charlie Adam went in there and did reasonably well with his resources back end of last season. He certainly made them harder to beat. I think there was quite a few draws in there initially, and they've not had a disastrous start to the season. But I just think on paper, looking at it, you know, they've lost some decent talent there in the forward positions.
All right, so Fleetwood and Harrogate, maybe with some work to do. I think we can all sympathise with Simon Weaver, because I'd imagine many of us listening have asked our dad for a few quid, only to be told no. And that was the transfer roundup. We'll do some previews later, but how about this? Next, we'll get back into scouting reports. Now then, Sam, you were at Kenilworth Road on Friday, and it was a Luton player who caught your eye there. Tell me more.
Yeah, well, he played for about 6 minutes, so I haven't got a lot to go on from that night. I say that he had a 100% pass completion, and he came on in the 84th, 85th minute, and he had 11 touches. And it was weird during the commentary, because I just was really taken by him straight away. His five or six bits of involvement, he was immaculate. And it was his decision-making that I really enjoyed. He's a central midfield player, Zach Nelson, 19 years old, attacking midfield player. I think Rob Edwards has hopes that he can play maybe as a false nine, as a number 10, could play wide as well. But his decision-making was just brilliant. Immediately after he came on, he put one delicious ball in from the right-hand side. He actually came on for Baptiste, who was really good as well in the centre of the park, who's obviously had good Premier League experience with Brentford. Yeah, I just really liked the look of him. And obviously it was on the back of that amazing goal in the League Cup for Luton in the week at QPR, which was like a side volley, if you haven't seen it, at the loft end at QPR. Brilliant goal. So in that right boot, he's got that in his armoury. He's got the whip delivery and his choice of pass. There's a little bit of guile as well. He had four attempts in that game at QPR in the cup. Another incredible delivery that could have led to a goal. So I think he's going to be a creative force, someone that can get goals for him. But I just liked his maturity coming on. And he's obviously one of a cluster. They've had Rule Walters and Joe Johnson, obviously, all started that opening game against Burnley. Maybe that was a little unfortunate that Rob Edwards had to blood all three, but they've got some real talent there. And he, considering it was the first time I'd seen him live and he played 6 minutes, absolutely one to keep an eye on.
All right, Zach Nelson, that is, wearing number 37 for Luton this season. Adrian, we mentioned you were at Birmingham v Walsall. I was hoping we were going to get the full lowdown on Nathan Lowe, but lo and behold, a Bristol Street Motors trophy game actually didn't provide that much of note for you. So instead, tell me a little bit more about Birmingham generally. Obviously, this is not the intensity of a League One game, but I'm sure there was a lot that you learnt anyway.
Yeah, no, it was good. Walsall played really well, won on penalties. It was one apiece, and they were worth that. But yeah, but it was an odd performance from Birmingham. Obviously, they made a lot of changes, but mostly filled the team with new signings. So I can just give you an indication. I think that the Alfie May positioning was a big takeaway. You know, he was barely in the box, certainly in the first half. In the second half, from the number 10 position, from the right wing, he did get into the box to have a few shots. But yeah, he was the one putting the balls into the area, which I thought was slightly odd. So one to keep your eye on as they look to accommodate Stansfield and Lyndon Dykes. The one that really caught my eye off the bench was Emil Hansen. He's Norwegian-born Swedish former under-21 international. He was really excellent on the left wing. We saw him come on the opening day of the season at half-time, skipping down the wing, crossed it in and won a penalty. And basically, the moment he came on, Birmingham went through the gears. They'd had about 11 shots up until 75 minutes, and they finished this game with 26 shots. It was a real difference. And he was the catalyst for me. Just brilliant footwork, really quick, travelling with the ball at his feet. And, you know, looking at his record from Dutch football, you know, he's a guy that will score goals. He will make plenty of assists. So, yeah, he's definitely one to keep an eye on. The other two briefly were in midfield. Mark Leonard, very good technical player, hit the bar with an amazing free kick. But in general, he was neat and tidy. And he was alongside deadline day signing Japanese player Tomoki Iwata from Celtic. And he has legs. He's everywhere. He's a sort of describes himself as a defensive midfielder, someone who's a bit of a beast. But in this game, he showed he can get forward as well. And he was piling forward down the left hand channel a lot in this game, and look to have some decent distribution as well. So it won't be easy for Leonard and Iwata to play regularly given the competition. But yeah, there's a few good players there. But this wasn't a stellar Birmingham performance. It was one to sort of a development game, I would say, for the players, for the team. If they play at the pace they did once Hansen came on in that last 15 minutes, they'll be too hot to handle. But if they play the ball tentatively and slowly, they were not going to hurt teams that are well organised, and everyone that plays Birmingham this season is going to set up defensively. So Birmingham might not always have it their own way. They've got to create their own tempo, and for me, Hansen might be one of the guys to provide that.
Interesting run of games coming up for Birmingham for the rest of the month. They've got the home game against Wrexham, which is going to be played in Birmingham, UK, rather than Birmingham, Alabama, and then they go to Rotherham and host Peterborough. It is a truncated EFL fixture list this weekend, so we're going to pick out a couple of games to have a look at next. In League One, everybody's talking about the big dust-up in South London on Saturday. It's Adrian Clark versus Sam Parkin, Nathan Jones versus Steve Evans, a.k.a. Charlton against Rotherham. A great fact from HLTCO on Twitter, I'm sure you follow, but well worth it if not. Nathan Jones took over at Charlton in February. His first game was away at Reading, a game they lost 2-0. Since then, they'd only lost once in the league. It was on Saturday. They went back to Reading, lost 2-0 again. Both games featured goals on 66 and 76 minutes. Nathan Jones is all right about it, though. We can hear from him now.
I'm raging with so much today. This ain't going to be a good interview, I've got to be honest. I am raging off my nut.
Sure you've heard that clip already this week, listener, but it's worth listening to again, isn't it? Sam, who wins in a fight between Jones and Steve Evans? I don't think it's as cut and dried as it sounds, because I suspect one would resort to dirtier tactics.
I'm sure we've had this conversation before. I think it's evoking memories for me of some kind of, who is the toughest manager? And I think we went for Nathan Jones just because of pure resilience, you know, bounce back ability. He'd be like a flyweight, wouldn't he? Like Ricky Hatton, Nathan. He's very, very lean. But, you know, Steve Evans would probably
eye gouge.
Definitely have, no, he'd have the Anthony Joshua, wouldn't he? Just out of nowhere, you know. So it would be a good battle. It could be fireworks, couldn't it? Between these two, much needed victory for Rotherham, which I'm sure we'll come on to a little bit later, chaps, considering I predicted that one. Not on the nose, unfortunately. I'm sure Clarkie has looked at this and probably got the same numbers and the same sense that I've got. Charlton aren't creating much at all. Defensively, they've been very good. Those were their first concessions of the season. They're lacking a little bit of creativity. That said, it looks like a Nathan Jones team, you know, in terms of the tempo. They've got runners in midfield. They got energy. The chemistry's not there with the front players at the moment, hence why they're not creating much. Hadmi's not had a particularly good start to the season. He's got Tyrese Campbell with him. Obviously, you've got Godden waiting in the wings. You've got Leeburn to come back. You've got Anike. So that will probably change as the season goes on. But in contrast, Rotherham have had 67 shots this season. Charlton have had 28. Rotherham have been creating chances for fun, but missing them. An XG4 of 7.2, I think, is right up there in the division. But obviously, it's not come to fruition, really, and they haven't been able to find that finishing touch until that game against Huddersfield. So, massive win for them. Front players really good. Wilkes in particular, Nombe, very, very good. Johnson, Clark, Harris, you supply them continually with chances. They'll start to win games. So a little bit of a contrast there that I think even in Rotherham's pretty underwhelming start to the season, they're probably creating more than Charlton. But Charlton defensively, really, really good right now. So it's kind of, yeah, a little bit in the balance and see which sides turn up, really.
Tight, low-scoring affair then, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and I don't know who's going to want the ball, because I think, yeah, both are kind of teams that are fairly low possession sides. I added up some of the numbers, and yeah, together they've made less combined successful passes than Crawley and Birmingham, Charlton and Rotherham. So, you know, they don't have that much of the ball. They get it forward early. But they're both abrasive and they're good, you know, from those transitional moments. So let's see. And Sam summed it up. Yeah, the numbers are crazy. You know, Rotherham have had the most shots. Charlton have had the fewest. Yet Charlton, you know, perceived to have had a much stronger start to the season. I do think only 9 shots on target across 4 games is a really poor return for Charlton. So as much as the positives are in defence, not the weekend, by the way, not with that second goal, but yeah, they do need to have a little bit more cohesion and punch at the top end of the pitch. Yeah, look, it should be a good game. I think come the end of the season, both these teams will be in and around the playoff picture.
Well, in League Two, I was going to ask you, Adrian, are both these two teams going to be in and around the automatic promotion picture? It's Doncaster versus Gillingham. Donny won 3 from 4 in the league. Gillingham unbeaten in it thus far. Doncaster obviously had that fantastic end to last season. Is the Gillingham challenge a sustainable one?
I think Gillingham has done well. I think they've brought in some good players. It'll be fascinating to see how Bradley Dack does, won't it? Obviously, he's been injury plagued, but you know, to go all the way from Sunderland back down to Gills is quite the step. Obviously, it's going to suit him personally, I guess, and his family. Yeah, this will be an interesting gauge, won't it? Because Donny, for me, are one of the best teams in the league. You know, got 2 really informed players in Luke Molyneux and Billy Sharp. They're creating a lot of chances. They're really fast when they break. They carry a threat in the air. You know, lots and lots of headed efforts on goal this season. And interestingly, despite scoring, I think they've got 9 already, Donny. They've also hit the post 5 times. Only one other team's hit it more than twice. So, you know, Donny could have got more points, could have scored more goals based on their performances so far. Gillingham, I've only let in 1, haven't they? So, you know, they're going all right. Maybe been fortunate to let in as few as they have. But yeah, they'll be solid and they're going to be really strong on set plays. They're missing Max Aymer, who got sent off at the weekend. Robbie McKenzie, who's been really good at the start of this season in midfield, dropped back and was a bit of a hero for Gillingham in their win against Chesterfield. So maybe he'll get the nod to start at centre-back against Donny. So that'd be a good test for a midfielder to be up against someone like Billy Sharp, who's obviously got really, you know, still got really smart movement. So yeah, no, I think these are 2 good teams.
Yeah, Clarkey said it there. They've only conceded the 1, but I don't know if you saw the highlights from the Chesterfield game. I mean, it was unbelievable, especially when they went down to 10 men. They were hanging in. Gillingham did it in a post or the woodwork twice, but Chesterfield did it 3 times. They had a goal disallowed. Their XG against total is 5.3, and they've only conceded that solitary goal. So I think they've rode their luck to a degree. But on the flip side for Gillingham, I think you've got Bradley Dack to come back. You've got Nevitt, who I don't think has been playing. I think Johnny Williams has been a bit in and out. So you've got some good quality attacking players probably to improve them. Going the other way, I think maybe similarities to Charlton. I don't think they're going to be overly easy on the eye maybe, but I think they're going to be aggressive. I think they're a good pressing team. They're probably not going to have loads of control in terms of possession. And in this game, they'll probably have to defend better than they did maybe against Chesterfield, because I like that front four of Donny. Mm. You've got Sharp or Ironside down the middle, then you've got Gibson and Molyneux either side with Clifton, who's been a very good player for Grimsby, and they're all off the mark apart from Ironside. So they've got some good attacking players, Donny, and I think me and Clarkey, when we were looking at them back in the last season, they're just very, very organised, Donny. It doesn't jump off the page what they're good at, but I think they're really well coached. They've got a good 11, albeit they've made a few signings and it's a little change from the back end of last season, but they have that winning mentality after the way they finished the last campaign. So tough game for Gillingham and a test of their credentials, I would suggest, considering they've had such a flying start to the season.
Yeah, I've got to say, my heart skipped a beat when I saw that Yeboah had scored for Donny against Huddersfield in the Football League Trophy. But no, it was Ephraim Yeboah, 18 years of age, not Tony, and apparently they're not related, so never mind. Nearly done for the show today, but let's rattle through the predictions. Now then, we'll come to last week's first. Leeds United versus Hull City. Adrian said 3-0, so he got a point. Sam said 3-1, so he got a point. Old MDA here said 2-0, got it bang on. First 3 points of the season for me, thank you very much. A perfect score, little reaction from my rivals, but I know that Clark in particular is...
It's a long season, mate. It's a long season.
Rotherham Huddersfield, 2-1 was the actual score. I said it'd be 1-1. Adrian said 2-1, but to Huddersfield. Sam said 1-0. So a point for Sam, none for Adrian and I there. And Accrington versus Colchester finished 1-1. We all predicted an away win. So a big fat zero for us there. How about this week then? We're going to start with Barnsley versus Bristol Rovers. Clarky, you mentioned Barnsley earlier. Do you think they're going to get a home win this weekend?
Maybe not. Actually, we should do the run in total, which I've worked out is 8 to Sam, 6 to you, 3 to me. So yeah, that's where we're at.
That's really poor.
Yeah, it's really bad from me. I need a couple on the nose, don't I? And Barnsley's home form is questionable. Very good on the road, but that you just haven't got it going. And Bristol Rovers' new look attack. We promise Omachere is one player that Sam mentioned. He's one of several new faces that seem to be gelling quite nicely. I think they can go there and score. I'm going to go for an entertaining 2-2 draw at Oakwell.
All right, I think this is the day it clicks for Barnsley at home and they win 3-1. What about you, Sam?
I'll probably side with you, Matt. Yeah, I don't think Bristol Rovers have scored on the road yet. They scored that amazing goal the other day with the team element, the beautiful cross and the flick and the finish. I think Barnsley will get it right at Oakwell, which has been a problem all the way back to the spring of last season, it feels. I will go 2-0.
Okay. Next up is Wrexham versus Shrewsbury. Sam, you can have the first stab at this one.
Oh, that's a big game, it feels like. I would have gone in on Wrexham on the winners of the transfer window had we had a little bit more time. One of the winners, I think they've done great business again. I think everyone is starting to sit up and think they could probably be promoted again. Can see nothing but a home win here. I don't even think Shrewsbury will make it that difficult. I will go for a 3-0 home win.
I'll do you one better and say 4-0. Is this a derby? We don't have time to get into that. Just give me a score, please, Adrian.
Yeah, it's not a derby. 2-0. 2-0 Wrexham, yeah.
All right, finally then, Cheltenham versus Harrogate. Clarky, I rather fancy you might go for a home win here.
I'm going to go for a home win, but not a handsome one. A lot of new players, haven't really sort of properly gelled yet. Cheltenham, you know, at home, they haven't been great. I'm going to go for a tense 1-0 win for Cheltenham at home to Harrogate.
Okay. Sam, Mike Flynn would have enjoyed going back to Newport midweek and winning there. Will he carry that momentum into the weekend?
Oh, it's the type of game where they need to take maximum points, isn't it? I mean, Harrogate went to Colchester and Colchester played very well, but Harrogate nicked it, a goal to nil. I don't know if...
I'm beating away, aren't they? Harrogate.
I don't know if Lightning can strike twice, though, in that regard. Don't feel like a draw. What did you say, Clarkey?
1-0 Cheltenham.
Yeah, I like it. Oh, I like it. Didn't they have a 3-3 at Aki? They had a 3-3 at Aki, didn't they? I'm going to go 2 each.
Okay, nice. I'm going to go 0-0. We'll keep the running tally going. But yeah, basically, I'm doing pretty well. Sam's doing even better. Adrian, not so much. Before we go, quick tweet of the week. This one, I mean, it's got no replies to it, which is one thing, but it actually comes from a club account. It is Salford City. Have 165,900 followers, which is quite a lot. And they were singing the praises of a recent result. A first clean sheet in 14 games at the Peninsula Stadium. It comes with a load of pictures from said action and said clean sheet at the Peninsula Stadium. It was against MK Dons on Monday night in the derby between teams that nobody really has that much affection for. My issue with it, Sam, is that why are you celebrating the fact that you've only just managed to keep a clean sheet at home for the first time in 14 games? It's got a soap bar emoji as well, which is one of the worst emojis, I would say. But yeah, why draw attention to your own inadequacy?
Yeah, I would have to agree. This feels like it's a subject that gets raised quite a lot on football cliches. Club admin, just getting the tone incorrect or just going down the wrong line for their post-match social media content. And I think this falls into that category, doesn't it? Just focus on something else, a little more uplifting rather than focusing on the goalkeeper and the back five who have not been performing particularly admirably in the recent times.
Don't think, Clarkie, that Carl Robinson's had any hand in this. It does have 78 likes, but the fact that nobody's seen fit to comment
that's
on
just
it.
Pure goalkeeping coaches in the Northwest. Just
David Reed just re-hitting, yeah, like.
It is extraordinary that there's no responses, you know, when you've got that many followers. You know, it just hasn't sort of pushed any buttons of anyone anywhere, which I find remarkable. Yeah, the soap emoji is completely new on me. So for its inclusion... I'm inclined to praise it a little bit because I've learned something there. But yeah, I mean, it's negative, isn't it? First, they've just won the game, just beat MK Dons. And they're talking about how rubbish they've been at defending. So yeah, poor.
Okay, I feel really bad about no replies. So I've just replied to it. Great work, guys. First of many, fingers crossed.
So two-faced.
Always had a lot of time for Salford City. All right, let's get out of here before I get in any more trouble. Let me remind you before we do that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers. Sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports. -up-2-50. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. We will be back with another show next week. Until then, follow us on X at EFL. What the other social media platforms you can find us? What the EFL? As I said, if you could leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Pods, wherever you get your podcasts, that would be much appreciated too. Thanks to Sam and to Adrian for their expertise and to you for your ears. Back with you again next week. Bye for now.